Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the best of TJ in science and technology interviews. You're invited to join us to listen to select researchers and scientists share their rarely discussed rediscoveries in science and technologies. The time is now to come forward in our brains and process the discoveries that can now be applied to assist us to master the days, months, and years ahead. So sit back and let your mind soar while your brain processes the best science news from our past that is very relevant to our lives today. Enjoy the best of TJN.
Greetings. Welcome to Hygiene for Humanity, brought to you by the Jewel Network, justifiably enchanted with enlightened living, broadcasting the science of life and living on the JewelNetwork.net. Well, greetings, my listening audience. It is truly a pleasure to be here with you again on this February snowy afternoon in New England. I'm here with my lovely co-host, Carol, and we're just delighted to be here. How are you doing today, Carol?
Oh, I'm doing just fine, Sharon. Greetings, everyone. I'm here in the warm, looking out at the snow again this week. So much snow here in New England. So how are you, Sharon?
I'm doing extremely well. And likewise, I am inside looking out at the snow, so I have absolutely no complaints at all. And I am always happy that our listeners took the time out of their busy schedule spend time to hear what we have to say about hygiene today. I know that we all have extremely busy lives, but I'd also like to say that it's important that we take time out of our busy lives to pay attention to this fabulous human body that we have that allows us to do everything that we do in our day-to-day living. So we recognize that, and I'd just like to say thank you again for allowing us to share information with you. And we are going to talk about caring for the nasal cavity today, for the nose, as most people would refer to the nose, which is part of our respiratory system. So, you know, it's the outermost part of our respiratory system, and how apropos. You know, looking out at the weather, it's so cold outside. Inside we have the dry heat, and I'm not sure if our listeners can tell, but you may notice, Carol, even myself, I'm a bit nasally, and I feel like my nose is somewhat stopped up, and I've been putting up with quite a bit of mucus. So what a great time to talk about the nose.
Oh, yes, it's that season, Sam, and you're not the only one with that nasal congestion. I see it all around me. Actually, I don't have it at this moment, but we're going to discuss how we can alleviate some of that. And as you were saying about time is so precious, we're so busy, at work, long hours, and rushing to work and rushing back and forth in traffic. You know, we really don't always take the time to take care of ourselves and see what the body really needs. We're just running, whether it's by car or by feet. We're always trying to beat the clock.
And a clock that doesn't eat or breathe, you know, you really can't compete with it. So I just want to, you know, let everyone know that we understand, and we just want to impress that self-care is so important because this is the body that we have to allow us to navigate this 21st century. So stay tuned with us. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we have lots of pearls to share with you on how to enhance and keep the respiratory system in tip-top shape. So stay tuned.
Humanity is experiencing a vast variety of disorders: HIV, Zika virus, Ebola, hypertension, meningitis, STD, Alzheimer's, and many others. These disorders are the results of not knowing how to live within and navigate the human body. Most of us have learned how to drive a car, but have yet to learn how to care for and navigate our bodies. Enroll into the Juul University of Immortal Sciences for Immortal Living to learn how to navigate and maintain a disease-free body. Visit us at www.juis.education or visit us on Facebook.
Welcome back to Hygiene for Humanity. I'm Carol, and Sharon is here with you today. We're going to talk about the nose. The nose, it's that section right in the middle of your face, that protruding section. If you look in a mirror and you're touching your face, so let's start with getting familiar with our nose again. Maybe we're used to washing the face and not paying attention to different parts of our body. So when you look in the mirror and you touch your forehead, that is called a frontal bone. Right across your forehead there, above your eyebrows. Now you come down to, you take your finger and you come down to between the two eyebrows. That is your nasal root.
Nasal
root.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where your frontal, that's where the frontal bone of the forehead and your nasal mm-hmm. bone meet.
Okay.
So we're just trying to get the audience familiar with the structure of the nose, the outer nose. And
mm-hmm.
you continue down that section. You see a deeper indentation, and if you notice, that is your nose bridge. This is where people who wear glasses, the nose rests right on. It rests right on there and holds the glasses on your face along with your ears there. Without this nose bridge, say you didn't have the nose there, you probably have to tie the glasses onto your face. Yeah, so we continue. Now, all this section from the nasal root down, you can carry your finger down, keep following the nose until you feel it. You feel a softness right where that hardness of a bone stops. And the softness begins, it's cartilage. All that soft section is cartilage. And when you take your finger, you can just move it back and forth. It's all flexible because cartilage is flexible, unlike bone.
Mm-hmm.
So the top portion of the nose is bone, and then as you go down to the flexible part, that's all cartilage. Now, inside of this...
And if you think about that, too, you know, the cartilage, you know, everything in the human body is done for a reason. And when you think about that nose sticking off the face, it would make sense that it's not all bone, because if it was, that bone would get broken, you know, pretty easily, considering, you know, how many times have you gotten hit in your nose and it really hurts, but, you know, because it's flexible, it doesn't break. So, fabulous design.
Right. There'll be quite a bit of nose job.
Yeah.
So as we continue down the nose, then you have, you see two openings, those are your nostrils there. And the openings refer to a vestibule, which again means opening into the nostrils there. It's called nares or nostril. This is where air goes in and come out. So you have the nostril separate. One nostril from the other, the left from the right, is called the nasal septum. And that's all made of cartilage. It's like a partition, a wall inside going straight up the nose that separates one nostril from the other.
Mm.
Now continue down the nose, right in the center. Now you can push on the center that separates both nostrils, that little pointy section, which is called the apex of the nose. It's also cartilage, but it's a dense, fibrous, connective tissue. It's dense. So it has a slightly different texture than the nasal, the nares on the side.
Mm-hmm. More cushiony, it seems.
Yes, it is more cushiony.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as we're talking about the nose today, the external nose, part of hygiene, we want to get familiar with the nose, and we want to know how to care for it. Now, there's a section called
the nasal fossa or nasal cavity. Those are interchangeable words, meaning the same thing. And that nasal cavity, it's a large, it's actually a continuation of the nostrils up into the back of the nose. And it's basically a large filled space back into the nose, and it helps in our respiratory, it helps our respiratory system in taking in air and filtering air, as well as we have our nose in the beginning, in the front of the nose. As you enter the nostrils, if you notice, each nostril has a circular opening depending on the shape of the nose, a slight circular opening, and a finger can fit in there. Just like a finger can fit in there, objects can fly in there. If you're out in your environment, say in the summertime, insects can be flying by and dust flying by and can get into the nose. But you have here into the nose. You have here right into the anterior of the nose that helps to trap any objects, foreign objects, from getting into the nose. And as you go, so the ear is not just there, you know. People may feel like some people complain, oh, you got nose here, you got to cut it out. But it's there for a reason. It's there to prevent objects from getting in and to keep dust particles from, say, basically housed in that area.
So that's the first line of defense for our respiratory system as far as keeping out large particles and insects.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. So now we go further up into the nose, and that's the nasal cavity. Which the nasal cavity is also, you know, it's divided into the right and left cavity by your nasal septum. Again, that's made of cartilage. And it serves as a respiratory area, and it serves also as an olfactory area. Respiratory, you know, that's a part of our breathing system. And olfactory, that's the system that gives us the sense of smell. Right inside that nasal cavity, we have three bones called turbinate bones. And these bones, you have in the inferior turbinate, middle turbinate, and superior turbinate, which are also called the concha. And the reason being how it got its name, the concha, if you think of a conch shell, how spiral it is, a snail shell, it's spiral, the conch, and because of that shape, the concha has that spiral shape, and that's how it got its name. Now,
and we recently talked about that shape, too, when we referred to the ear, because the cochlea has, there's that shape again, you know, that spiral type squirrel shape.
We all have that.
In our ear.
And so these shapes are, They're shaped that way actually to help us. It functions. It has a function in also filtering what gets into the nasal tract. Now, these bones are covered with a line of blood vessels. These bones extend, they contract, and it acts as a radiator, where warm, cold air that comes in that you breathe in, so it warms the air before it gets to your lungs. Because the lungs can't really, it's not friendly. The cold air is not friendly to the lungs. Because if you notice, sometimes you don't prepare yourself and you get right out into the real low frigid temperature, that taking in the cold air can cause you to cough. That's a reflex.
Mm-hmm.
It causes you to cough because it's preventing that cold air from just hitting the lungs. You know, your body temperature is different.
Right. So those lungs have been used to like 98.6 degrees all the time. So if you take especially a big breath in from your mouth and it goes in your lungs, if it doesn't go through the nose and pass through the channels to get warmed and pick up the humidity from the conchae, you know, and that's who you mentioned, the shape of them. I just wanted to add that, you know, the shape of them actually add more surface area. So there's more area for the air to wind around. So it's more time for it to come in contact with heat and pick up humidity so it's warm as before it hits the lungs.
Yeah,
and the other thing, right, and I know you mentioned that, you know, the chondria are actually made of spongy bone, so they're light, and they have a blood supply to them, lots of blood vessels, but they're also covered with a mucous membrane. And that mucus really has a very important function. The mucus helps to trap any particles that may have gotten through the nose hairs, smaller particles. So the mucus on the conchae trap any excess or any smaller particles and prevent them from going deeper into the respiratory tract. When these allergens or these things touch the conchae, the mucus production may increase, just to let you know, okay, I got some dirt in here filling up, I need to blow, you know, so your nose fills up with mucus.
That is so right, Sharon, because inside the, along the walls of the nasal cavity, you have cilia. That's those, the cilia are really very small here, like
circuit,
and mucus. And like you said, the mucus traps pathogens, dirt, and it helps these hairs, they work in unison, like, you know, like a beat, like a dance. And it does move these things along the wall, down the cavity, back into, you know, through your nasal passage, right into your pharynx, right into the esophagus, and then you swallow it, and it's digested in your stomach.
Right.
So
either you swallow it or you spit it out, you know.
Oh, you spit it out.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have mucus buildup, a lot of times you notice you swallow. That's part of your body clearing that mucus out. You may not have a cold, and you may not be stuffy, but you can feel like a slight drip down the throat, and then you end up swallowing. And it's basically the nasal cavity doing its work.
Exactly. Certainly is. So when you smell something that is harsh or basically assaultive to your respiratory tract, you may notice that you're producing some mucus and you want to cough and sneeze it out. Your body's working. That's what it should do. So don't look at that as an annoyance. Thank your body. It's like, yes, you're working. Let me go clear you out to assist you. So this is how we keep ourselves healthy.
Yes,
So as much as we can do to assist the body, you know, that is only going to improve our state of being. Now, there is something about the kanji that I wanted to mention. You mentioned that there are three parts. You have the inferior, medial, and superior. And the inferior is in the lowest position, and that's actually, you know, connected to the upper jaw, and it stretches out horizontally across each nasal passage. So there's no air coming up into the nasal cavity that doesn't wind around through this kanji. And there's a smaller kanji called the medial. And then the smallest is the superior, which is further up in the head. And I found it interesting that the smallest or the superior kanji are actually extensions of what is known as the ethmoid bone.
Yes.
And the ethmoid bone, it separates the nasal cavity from the brain. So not only do the kanji warm the air before it goes to the lungs, but also warms it before it gets to that spot. We don't want cold air going into our brain either. So that's only separated by a space there.
So it's like the bodyguard for the respiratory system.
Right.
So, you
and
know, did you want to say more on that?
The only other thing I wanted to mention about the contract that I found interesting is that, you know, they do contract and dilate, and they determine how much air goes to each hemisphere of the brain. And that they're made out of actually erectile tissue. And that is the same erectile tissue that is found in our reproductive organs. So that allows them to swell or contract. So I just thought that was an interesting point about our conchae.
Yes, everything is working in unison, and everything in the body has some kind of connection, you know, for a reason. Yeah. So now we continue with the nasal cavity. We know that it warms the air before it gets to the lungs. It filters from dust particles and other pathogens, bacteria, from getting to the lungs, as well as when air comes in, if there's a rush of air coming in, it won't just surge down there. The air can be turbulent. The bones, like you said, the structure of it, it flows through there. It flows through these bones and calms the air before it gets to the respiratory tract. And I didn't mention, you know, we have a nasal cycle. We have a nasal cycle, and going back to how we take in air, each nostril is not always working at the same time. Would you believe that the nostrils, they work in shifts?
I know. That sounds like a great partnership there, that we have one that's always dominant and the other one that's passive.
Yeah.
Working together.
It says that the each cycle may last anywhere from 1 to 4 hours. So when one is taken in the ear, the other one is at rest, buried in the ear, and sleeping up the ear. So basically they work in shifts. At some point, when that shift is over, then the nasal cycle reverses.
Right, right. And the nasal contrail, actually, what are causing this cycle to take place, because now they have the capability of swelling and dilating or shrinking and contracting to the lung and the brain. So, you know, I want our listeners, you know, pay attention to your breathing cycle and take note of which nair is dominant. Like, so you'll find that one nair you're able to bring a lot of air in and the other one does not have as much air coming in. But this cycle will change. Just pay attention to it. So one is dominant and one is passive.
Yeah, and it's not to say that you're really stuffed up. It's not like you're filled with mucus and you can't breathe. Not at that point. It's, say, when you're not going through any excess mucus or cold symptoms, you notice that one section of the one area of the nose, one side is clearer than the other.
Mm-hmm.
That is the cycle taking shift
there. That's part of the nasal cycle.
Right.
All right, we're going to break for some information from our sponsors, Carol, and we're going to continue with talking about the nasal cycle when we get back.
You are listening to the Jewel Network Science Radio Broadcasting Frequency. The Jewel Network provides the neural nutrition and stimulates expansion and evolution of the human brain, nervous system, and body. Remember, our source is a neuron.
Humanity. If you're just joining us, we're having a discussion on the nose, pus in the nose, and we're actually talking about the nasal cycle at this point. Again, our nose works in cycles. One nostril will be taking in a larger volume of air, while the other one sort of takes the rest, and they basically interchange these cycles. They work in shifts.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the reasons I read that this was necessary, Carol, and tell me what you think, is that for acuteness of sense of smell, you know, if all of the air rushed into both nares at the same time, it would go quickly past the smell receptors. Our sense of smell may not be as acute, but since some air continues to seep in more slowly through the passive nostril, it allows a longer period of time for the olfactory nerves to be in contact with that air, and it's said to give our sense of smell a more acuteness.
Yes, that is so. That is so. Because, you know, the olfactory system, basically a part of the limbic system, which is in the brain. And once the smell, the sense get into the nose, just like the hair in the nose, it has a cilia. It has hair cells, which are very microscopic, and they have receptors on them. Actually, the hair cells attached to them are axons, nerve cells. And so the time that it takes for the ear to get in, time gives these axons time to send information to the brain to detect what the smell is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it needs some transmission time.
Mm-hmm. It's like it's an electrical activity. It's like running through a wire to the brain to get the information and then send it back, and we can detect what the smell is. We know the difference between fish and strawberries.
Mm-hmm.
So now, you ever wonder, you know, when you have a smell come, you happen to have a scent that reminds you of something in the past, that brings a memory back.
And yes.
And that's because our sensory system also works with memory. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, so you can be
do trigger memory.
Yeah, it brings a memory of a certain event or maybe a behavior because of the smell that you must have had, the smell at that time. And it's like when we were talking about the ear, all these different parts working together to make something happen. The same thing with the nose, with the nasal cavity.
Right. And
it's interesting to know that studies say 1 in 1,000 people don't have a sense of smell.
Hmm.
And, you know,
that
is
interesting, Carol.
At least in the U.S., you know, and it's called anosmia. So we don't have a sense of smell.
It's called what?
Anosmia. A-N-O-S-M-I-A.
Anosmia, okay.
Anosmia. Which,
Can
be caused by different reasons. It could be because you could have head injury in the frontal lobe. It can also be whether you had surgery or, you know, a tumor. And
yes.
as well as it could be other things related to what type of chemicals you're ingesting, you know, that may have damaged those ears on the brain.
And another thing I'm thinking of, too, is that could it be that people aren't doing proper nose hygiene and those conchi are just laden with mucus and edema, not letting the olfactory system really do what it is supposed to do? So that kind of brings me up to the next topic that I wanted to talk about, which is how to clean the nasal cavity. And I know most of us in living here in the West, basically, we blow our nose. You know, you may wash your nose out in the shower with water. That's good. But there's also a deeper cleaning that needs to take place. It's called a nasal irrigation. And nasal irrigation is a method that has been around for many, many, many decades. And it involves flushing out the nasal passages with a saline solution, or you could even use plain water, but a saline solution is that may have become dried and crusted. If you suffer from sinusitis or your sinuses just swell or the conchi swell, well, washing out your nasal passages with the salt water solution will not only flush out excess mucus, will alleviate edema, but it will also help your sense of smell and also help the cilia, the small hairs in the conchi, to actually work more efficiently. Because you think about it, those are tiny little microscopic hairs. And if you have a lot of mucus in there and they're all stuck, laden down, and they can't do their job, they're just sleeping in there because the mucus is so heavy, by cleaning them out, you allow that you allow them to be able to do their job and continue to filter your nose. Now, the nasal irrigation it has been done for years with what is known as a neti pot. Neti, N-E-T-I, is a Sanskrit word that means nasal cleaning or nasal washing. And this has been used, like I said, for many, many decades, probably hundreds of years, throughout India and Southeast Asia. And it's actually a practice that's as common as brushing your teeth. So to irrigate the nasal cavity, like I said, you may use a neti pot, which is usually a ceramic little pot that you insert into the nares, or you may use a bulb syringe or an irrigation bottle. And there are very cute little irrigation bottles that are made. You have companies out there that make them especially for your nose. They're made actually in sizes for children,
and it's recommended to start teaching your children from the time they can master brushing their teeth. You start introducing them to the little irrigation bottle, especially if they're prepped for any type of infection. You want to do this hygiene daily, and you introduce it. You know, you don't want to traumatize them. Just like with the toothbrush, you kind of put it in their mouth and let them get used to it. You slowly introduce the irrigation bottle and let them get comfortable with it and let them do it. And you explain to them how to do it. You show it. You show them how, and you do it with them. And simply put, you know, and you can get this on YouTube. You can find information on the Internet on how to do it. And you basically want to pay attention to which one of your nares are dominant, which one is more open. So the one that is not as open, the one that's passive, we want to put the open or the dominant nare down, head down over the sink, and instill the saline solution into the passive nare. When you instill that water into your nare, it's actually going to run through your sinuses and out the other side, and it's going to bring out mucus with it. Now, the mucus may not come out right away. The saline may just come out, but rest assured, over the next couple of hours, it's going to draw mucus out, and you're going to start expectorating it. So if you're doing this for the first time, you may not want to do it at night because you may have to get up several times to keep clearing the mucus and it may interfere with your sleep. So you might want to try this during the day when you're up and you can start clearing off the mucus. I know someone who did this who had a sinusitis and simply that they woke up in the night and really couldn't breathe because there was so much mucus in their throat. And I think some must have... The person ended up getting pneumonia and right now has an aversion to using the neti pot again, although I'm trying to explain to them that consistent cleaning of the nares and the sinuses will prevent this buildup, and this is something that should happen all the time. You know, so if you use this routine every time you brush your teeth or three times a day, depending on your status, you keep your nares clean, you keep your conchae clean, you improve your sense of smell. If you have something like sarcoidosis and you have lesions in your nose, this will also be helpful for you because the saline solution will help decrease the swelling and increase your breathing ability as well as your sense of smell.
Before
we
go on,
Karen,
you know what I realize is a lot of times, you know, people do come down with these infections or inflammation. But while they're doing treatments to alleviate this whole softness or, you know, uncomfortable mucus there, they're not realizing what they're putting into their body. Because if you have a buildup of mucus and you're taking in excessive amount of dairy, milk, ice cream, cheese, homemade like ice cream and yogurt, the coolness going down your throat will feel good, but it's all causing your body to build up more mucus. While they may be rinsing out their nose, they're taking in foods that are building more mucus. So the cycle is still there, and they're not realizing what's going on. As well as I see people with the infections, and they can barely breathe, they talk, and they're still smoking. Understand?
Right.
So there's
right.
many causes as well. That one person that had that, you know, unfortunate incident, it could have been something that had been brewing for a while, you know.
And, of course.
Yeah.
Of course it was, yes. And
you
the
know,
fact that they did it at night,
uh-huh.
they did it at night, and it was very effective. The neti pot drained as it was supposed to. But, you know, he probably should have gotten up and done it again during the night or at least gotten up, blow out the nose, expectorate what's in your throat, you know.
And that's another thing. I come across patients as well as in a public a lot of times, you can hear that junky cough and they don't spit it out. Now, your
right.
body takes care of what is in there, but what is supposed to spit out, it causes you to cough or sneeze to get rid of it, but instead they swallow it. So it's like if you constantly do that, then it's like it's too much. You know, the cough is for a reason for them to expel this phlegm. So, you know, yeah, that could be why it stays in the body and builds up, or you stay in bed and not coughing all the time. Then you can get, you know, pneumonia. So I can understand that happening,
You know, so, and the other thing I want to point out about the nasal irrigation is you do not want to use table salt, otherwise known as earth salt. You want to make sure that you are using a high-quality sea salt. Now, the earth salts are the common salts that you buy in the store, Diamond Crystal and the ShopRite brand or Stop and Shop. You really want to use a sea salt. Earth salts are very harsh on the cardiovascular system. And even in Western medicine, you know, I've heard for years, ever since I was a child, you know, people with high blood pressure, they don't need to have salt. It only makes it worse. Well, yes, if you are taking earth salt, but sea salt, a high-quality sea salt, is very rich in minerals. High-quality sea salts have anywhere from 60 to 84 minerals and are only 75% sodium chloride, whereas your common table salt, probably 100% sodium chloride. And I'm not sure that people are understanding that you need salt in your body, but you need a high-quality sea salt. So some of the high-quality sea salts that I came across that you may use for your nasal irrigation, we have the French gray sea salt, otherwise known as French Celtic sea salt, and this is put out by a company called Eden. Now, this sea salt comes from France, where they have 9,000 acres of salt ponds as a natural preserve. So that's the French sea salt or the Celtic sea salt. Celtic sea salt is a sort of wet salt, clumpy-ish and wet, and it's not white. It has kind of a beige-ish color to it, and that's okay because it is unprocessed. It is not bleached. Another salt that is a high-quality sea salt that you can use is Redmond Real Salt, and that one is actually mined right here in the USA. It comes from mineral-rich deposits formed by ancient seas in Utah, and it contains 62 trace minerals. It has no additives or chemicals or heat processing of any kind. And it, too, is sort of a beige-ish color, maybe have a little pink hint to it. And it's from right here in the U.S., so pretty local. There's also the Himalayan salt, Himalayan crystal salt, that is mined from 5,000 feet below the Himalayan mountain range. And it has been subjected to enormous amounts of pressure over millions of years, and this salt is over 99% pure. The higher amount of pressure that salt is exposed to forces it to produce a superior or excellent state of order within the crystalline structure of the salt. And Himalayan sea salt is said to contain 84 minerals and trace elements.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I did see something about the Himalayan sea salt that said there are miners out there who are producing it at cheaper prices, but they aren't going as deep down into the mountain to retrieve it, and it may have impurities in it. And the other thing that they said about the Himalayan sea salt is that if it's crushed, they use a nickel bit, and that the nickel may be putting particles into the salt. You know, you use your judgment what you would like to use. I love how that Himalayan crystal salt looks, and you can, it comes with a little grater, the chunks, and you can actually grate it into a fine powder. But I also found that there is something called a Kalahari Desert salt, and this salt is mined from the pristine, uninhabited location below the Kalahari Desert in South Africa. Three underground streams converge on a layer of pure salt. It is an ancient inland underground salt pan that provides a tasty mineral-rich raw salt. This is supplied by Sun Food Superfood. We dry by the desert sun. It is naturally white.
has never been bleached, and it does not clump like Celtic salt. It's not a wet salt. It's a dry salt. So those are four high-quality salts that I found that you can feel free to use those in your neti pots or even in your food, you know. They're also great in your food, so you can get all your minerals that you need. Looks like we're coming up on a station break, so we're going to stop and see what our sponsors have to say, and we'll be back to talk some more about the nasal cavity and cleansing of the nasal cavity. So stay tuned.
From Jewel Publications, Straight from the Heart by Dr. Jewel Pookrum, an incredible volume of work, Dr. Jewel explores the genesis of disease, prostate health, and sexuality, as well as sharing a new look at the effects emotions play in the resolution of cancer. Straight from the Heart is an outpouring of wisdom that you will read over again. Get your paperback or ebook copy today.
Do you love what you hear on TJN? Visit thejewelnetwork.net and sign up for our new memberships. For full access to our show archives in their entirety and more, visit www.thejewelnetwork.net for signing credit to find. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Hygiene for Humanity. And we're discussing the nose and how to care for the nose, how to cleanse the nose. Sharon, you had some other information on this?
Yeah, well, you know, we're talking about the nasal irrigation. So if our listeners didn't get it, I just wanted to say, you know, who should perform nasal irrigation? And I say everyone, Carol. You know, if you work in a place that is heavy laden with particulate matter, and particulate matter, I'm going to define that as particles, whether they're solid or liquid, that get suspended into the air and you breathe them in. For example, you know, if you're cleaning with bleach, and after you finish cleaning with the bleach and you've gone away and, you know, hours later, you still smell bleach. Well, why do you smell bleach? Because there are particles that are in your nasal conch that you're still smelling, so you are a perfect candidate for nasal irrigation. If you ride the New York subway system, I say, you are a perfect candidate for nasal irrigation. If you pump gas all day long or work in an environment where you're breathing in toxic fumes, you need to do nasal irrigation. If you work in an environment where you're dressing wounds all day, if you're a nurse, if you're a doctor, if you're working in an environment where they're using toxic chemicals, you are probably a candidate who should be using nasal irrigation. So I think all of us could benefit from this.
Of course, that's so true. Like you said, you know, using these chemicals like bleach, I see many housekeeping staff come down with respiratory ailments, and usually it's not due to colds. You know, it's a constant use of different chemicals in the profession. And in my practice, I notice a lot of them start out without any lung issues and end up with asthma and recurrent respiratory episodes because of the chemicals that they're using.
Mm-hmm.
And not everyone is aware of this irrigation of the nose.
No, I think it's something that we really need to, you know, put at the forefront. And like I said, we have to start with the children, teaching them how to care for their nose. So many of our children have asthma, and I see them, you know, the parents are walking with breathing machines, and they're breathing in this Atrovent and all of these medications to open up their airways, and those things have side effects. Not to mention, you don't even know how much the child is getting in. It cannot be gauged. And I remember providing breathing treatments for the patient in the hospital, even if it was being done by the respiratory therapist. If you're in the room, you're breathing in that medication. You taste it in your mouth. You're so you need to go home and irrigate your nasal passages so that, you know, you're not affected by those drugs. You know, I never liked being in the presence of it, so.
Well, you know, as you mentioned, teaching the children, if you notice, a lot of times, little children, young children, pick their nose. And, you know, some people may have a habit, but when you see a young child, say, 3 or 4 picking their nose, it could be an irritation or it's in there, and they don't know how to express this. So naturally, the finger fits up there, so they're going to put their finger there. So if you teach them at an early age what they can do, use a Kleenex, so, you know, to wipe it out, and then, or you can teach them at that time to irrigate it, then they realize, oh, well, the reason I'm feeling this, it needs to be clean. And they won't feel like, you know, being reprimanded for picking their nose, because they're most likely doing it because something is irritating them.
Right. And although the finger fits in the nose, it's not proper hygiene to sit and pick your nose in public. If you need to clean your nose, use a tissue or a hanky to clean your nose, and when you go home, you irrigate your nose so that you're not picking your nose all day, because you know you're cleaning it regularly. And I think that would prevent that. This is something that we really need to enforce and embrace as a culture, you know, to clean our nose. You look at the environment we live in, we're exposed to so many pollutants. Okay, and I mentioned earlier how the conchi, there's the ethmoid bone there that keeps the air, you know, the brain is right on the other side. So what we breathe in goes through our body, it goes to our brain. Mm-hmm. I did want to touch on sinusitis, Carol, you know, before the end of the show. Sinuses are hollow spaces within the skull, and there's a total of 8 of them, and they are paired. So we have one of each in the left and right side of the face. Blockage of this tissue in your nose from allergens or cold or anything that blocks up the sinuses and makes them unable to drain. People, you know, say I have problems with my sinuses or I have a sinusitis. They'll get a headache in the back of their head, sometimes in the front, behind their eyes. Simple nose irrigation done every day could totally help alleviate these symptoms. But the other thing I want to mention about the sinuses is that the sinuses, inflammation, and they take the over-the-counter Allegra, the antihistamine, the Tavis, the Zyrtec, and they will take these things every year, for weeks and weeks at a time and get temporary relief. It never deals with the total issue, but it's almost like they're at a loss, and they just spend money on these over-the-counter treatments, these antihistamines, and they're actually shutting down their own body's natural response.
Well, they were initially designed to be temporary fixes so you can find out the root problem, but, you know, nowadays it's just treating the symptom and not looking for the root problem, so people end up, instead of using it for weeks, they use it for years.
Right.
So
they're only a temporary fix, and it's just treating the symptoms. So, the swelling in the sinuses, you know, usually, like I said, it's edema. It may be something viral, but certainly antibiotics should not be the first line of defense, especially if you have a viral infection. What are antibiotics going to do for that? It's not a bacteria, or if it's just edema, swelling of the sinuses. Antibiotics will not help that. I think people also need to pay attention to the color of the mucus that's coming out. If you think that it's infected because the mucus is green or it's dark yellow or it's turning orange, then that's a problem. But if you have white or just light yellow mucus and you know that it's your body reacting to irritants, an antibiotic is not going to help you. You need nasal irrigation, you know, to clean the mucus out and keep the sinuses open. Now, the other thing that I learned, Carol, from looking at the way our Chinese family deal with sinusitis in the traditional Chinese medicine, they relate this to an emotional factor, and they say that the lungs and the colon and the skin are considered to be part of the metal element in our body's defense.
So this makes sense when you consider that the mucous membranes that line the respiratory and digestive system are a primary line of defense. Likewise, our skin, it protects us from what side of the body from flowing out, as well as it defends and protects the inner body from outside pathogens. So
yeah.
There's definitely a link between chronic respiratory issues and a clogged up colon. And it's said that if your sinuses are clogged up, you probably have a blocked up colon. So you may want to think about the hygiene of your bowels and to get that going. There's also a link between chronic respiratory issues and grief.
Oh, grief.
Unresolved long-standing grief. So a stuffy head may very well be related to the inability of someone to grieve. And a post-nasal drip can be thought of as internal tears or suppressed grief.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've just come across such wonderful information and the correlation and the synchronicities that exist between Eastern medicine and our human body and the way we look at things and the Western medicine. You know, I'm schooled in Western medicine, and I so enjoy learning the other aspects to keeping our bodies in tune, you know, being proactive as opposed to reactive.
Well, that's
so,
cool, because, you know, when you learn in Western medicine now, the premise is basically dealing with the body in parts, not as a whole, whereas Eastern medicine usually takes everything into consideration when treating an ailment. So if two areas, the nasal respiratory system and the colon are related, it does make sense if you're treating everything as a whole. You're going to deal with your diet as well as the cleansing of that part of the body too. You need to clean inside of the body, refrain from certain foods that are going to bring up cause mucus buildup and cause your immune system to slow down, and cleansing the intestines, you know, it should help also the respiratory tract.
Oh, yeah.
See, with apple cider vinegar, it's taken not only to cleanse your intestines, your bowels, but taking in, say, apple cider vinegar with just 1 to 2 teaspoons of the raw apple cider vinegar with about 6 ounces of water, drinking that first thing in the morning, it helps to cleanse those pipes, and it breaks up mucus congestion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people
clean
put
your
honey
stomach
in it,
yeah.
But, you know, you can just drink it without the honey.
Yeah. Well, we're down to the last 5 minutes of the show, and although I have lots more information here that I would like to share, I'd also like to remind everybody that the Jewel Network has repackaged the balancing program. It's very exciting. And also, Dr. Jewel's book, Vitamins and Minerals from A to Z, is available in the e-store, jewelnetwork.net. And order your copy. It has vital information that you need to know to help navigate through this 21st century. Stay tuned to the Jewel Network all week long. We have lots of vital information to educate you and help you develop the mind of scientists. So I'd like to thank everyone for listening. And Carol, is there anything you'd like to say to our listeners before we go?
Yes, remember we started with the notes today and talking about the time that we take to take care of ourselves.
Yes.
The notes represent self-recognition. So we really try to make time and recognize that ourselves are important as well.
Right.
You know, once this body stops running, you know, what can you do? The work, all of that continues on without you. So you have to put yourself first.
Put yourself in your life.
Exactly. Exactly. You take care of this vehicle called the body just better than you'll take care of the vehicle that takes you around, the car. So
That's right.
Sharing this information. And we'll see you again next Tuesday at 5 p.m. right here on this Thank you for listening.
All right. Bye-bye.
This broadcast is under full copyright and trademark protection owned by the House of Jewels. This broadcast in its entirety, nor any part of this broadcast, can be reproduced, copied, transcribed, placed in podcast format, placed into MP3 format, or suspended on any internet digital location without express permission from the House of Jewels, Washington State, USA. To reproduce or suspend this broadcast in any digital location other than the Jewel Network is prohibited, and legal proceedings will follow accordingly. Thank you for listening.